It's time for another barn takeover.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the boog, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir. We're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. We're buttoned up, ready to go this morning. I'm your host, Kyle Rush, a.k.a. Charlie Five. I still get tripped up on that. We're ready to rock and roll. Happy Thursday. It's becoming my favorite part of the week. We're doing another barn takeover where the show is completely driven by members of thebarnauburn.com. We submit the question, or I ask for questions to be submitted on Wednesdays. Compile a list of some of the best ones, and then we just rock it. We just rock with it and have some fun. It's really, really good questions today. We talk about what type of QB Hugh really needs in this system. Are there too many cooks in the kitchen? Who are some of the 2025 impact recruiting class impact guys next year? We're going to dive all through that. But before we get started, we got to give a shout out to mybookie.ag. Use coupon code next round for a double up deposit bonus. Give them up to, I think, $500. They'll give you up to $500 back free to play with just by using that coupon code on your first deposit. So every betting line you can imagine, you can take advantage of that bonus with. Parlays, teasers, live betting, first half, second half, doesn't matter. They got a little bit of everything. Check them out, mybookie.ag. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. First question is a banger, and it's from a guy who is a message board guy. This guy, if you've done message boards, you've heard of this name, Pena87. He's been around a long time, and he's been a member of all the sites, and he's very active and has a lot of good insight and questions. And here we go. From Pena87, should we focus on finding, apologize that misspelling, should we focus on finding a quarterback who can navigate our complex offense, or find someone like Cam or Nick who can succeed just off sheer talent? And I think this is more so of what type of quarterback does Hugh Freeze want? What is Hugh Freeze's type? To answer the first part of the question, I don't think you have to find. I don't think this offense requires someone that's like a, just an incredible genius. I mean, just you've heard Bo Wallace talk. I mean, let's just be real. I mean, not just a total knock on Bo Wallace, but I mean, we've heard him talk. Like, it doesn't take a genius to be able to run this offense, and I don't think it takes a physical freak to be able to run this offense. Again, Bo Wallace, Ryan Athlin, Stephen Calvert, you ever heard of that name? That was the first-year quarterback at Liberty who threw for 3,600 yards, 27 touchdowns to only 6 interceptions. Like, I don't think you have to have a – I don't think you have to have this just create a player type player to be able to run this offense. And I don't think you have to have like this brain surgeon type player to run this offense. So what do you have to have? And I think it's pretty simple. I think what you have to have is a quarterback who can learn how to think like you, a quarterback that can sort of throw out the way he sees the game and sort of swallows the pride of what he knows about football and just tries to figure out how to see the game like you, because the decisions that have to be made, the plays are designed with the idea that I'm going to execute it like, through Hugh's brain. The kids that have been able to do that have had a lot of success, more so success than their physical attributes would have allowed them to in other situations. I mean, Bo Wallace threw for over 3,000 yards for 3 seasons. I mean, he was a little bit under 3,000. It was like 2,990-something the first year at Ole Miss. And then he threw for over 3,000 yards. Ryan Athlin just lit it up under Hugh as offensive coordinator and then as head coach. Chad Kelly threw for, I think, over 4,000 yards 1 year. And then you look at the track record at Liberty and taking Malik Willis, who couldn't do a read option at Auburn correctly. Everybody remembers Alabama State pulling him, you know, Malik finally gets a chance. They run a read option on the 2 yard on our own 2 yard line, and he pulls it, gets a safety, and then gets chewed out on the sideline. He couldn't even run a read option correctly, and then he goes to Liberty, and I think in 2 years he had close to 60 total touchdowns, maybe more. I know it was around that number, rushing and passing. So it was physical. The physical traits are great, but it's not necessary. So I think the big thing is, can I find somebody who doesn't care about what they know and just wants to learn, just listen to the way I teach and learn and learn how to think how I think through these situations. Good thing about Deuce Knight's got kind of both. He's run RPOs and he's got the physical traits. That's what makes me very excited about his potential. Let's go to the next one. Chad is right. How much do you think Peyton Thorne's lack of success will affect Hugh's ability to get a top-tier portal addition at quarterback this offseason? Peyton's in a tough spot because they changed systems after the first year, and Hugh Freeze's system is not necessarily the easiest to pick up in one offseason. And Peyton's also played a ton of football, so he's learned a lot about the game leading up into this last year. So a lot of that sort of playing against him. So it's probably making him look worse than he actually is or could be. But I think it's definitely a concern. It's definitely a concern. But on the flip side, guys look at things different. The players look at situations differently. For example, a portal guy is going to look and they say, you know, I got Cam Coleman next year. I got Perry Thompson next year. I got Malcolm Simmons. I got a lot of young guys who got a lot of playing time last year. I'm going to have some big time weapons. What can they bring? What can they add on the offensive line to protect me? Because I think with my skill set, I can, you know, make some stuff happen with this receiving core. And then on top of that, you look at the track record of Hugh's success with quarterbacks. I think it would be. I don't necessarily think Peyton, the way he's performed is going to really hinder. It's going to make it maybe a little bit tougher. You're going to have to sell it a little bit more. But if you look at Peyton's stats this year, he missed a whole game, but he's on pace to throw for somewhere around 2,600 yards, 2,600 yards over the next, you know, counting the next game and assuming you don't make a bowl game. If you make a bowl game, obviously that's going to go up even more. And if he were to have played in the game that he missed, the game and a half that he missed, I mean, it's not even a whole game. I mean, it's not even just one game. It's a game and a half. He could have been around that 3,000 yards the way that the production has been, even in losses. So there's still some stuff to sell there, and I still feel like Auburn's going to be in the market big time for a top-tier portal quarterback, and money is going to be a big factor as well. So definitely I can see it making it tougher, but I don't think it hinders Auburn to the point where hinders Hugh to the point where you're not going to be able to compete for those top level guys. Great question though, and it's totally a rational thought. Definitely something you got to worry about. This is a great question. Rooster 2628. Do you think headset communications might be contributing to some of the offensive issues, or do you think it's actually helping Peyton Thorne make adjustments? This is a great question. Okay. So sometimes you have things like you like it. Sometimes you got things cooking, and even if someone is looking at it and how you do it from the outside and is like, man, the way you do that is so inefficient and so crazy, but you don't care because you're whooping tail. You're good at it. I can think of a company I used to work for. The order management system was like from the 80s. I mean, and this is just a couple of years ago. This is not like way back when. This is like using a system that was developed in the 80s, like 3 years ago. Okay. you're talking that you're printing off invoices on the white, the pink, and the yellow paper with the holes on the side. You got to pull, and it's just the black screen where you're putting you're inputting the orders, and it looks like it's like a Microsoft beginner level program, old school system. But we kicked everybody's tail. We had a way we did things. And I'm sure people that came in the way we did inventory probably looked at it, thought we were crazy, but we kicked everybody's tail. It just sort of was what it was. This helmet comm situation, I kind of feel like I almost wonder if it's hindering it by adding a different wrinkle that makes you get out of the way that you did things so well. Hugh, when he ran tempo, you call plays in from the sideline. Each position group had a signal coming in. So there's really no need to have the helmet communications. And then now all of a sudden we're huddling. We're doing things sort of out of Hugh's nature that most people would say the helmet communications are great. And I think they are for the most part, but I think it also could add an element that if it's not part of your, if it doesn't accelerate or help the way that you did do things, like I think about Elaine Kiffin, I feel like this helmet communication thing is perfect for him because he's more of an NFL mind. He probably can call checks a little bit more efficiently through that because obviously he's been used to it in the past. So that it might supplement him, whereas it's a completely different way of doing things for Hugh. So sometimes I wonder if it's added an element of overthinking or added an element of, an avenue to sort of get off of track of what you do the best. And what Hugh has done when his offense has been at the best, it's running tempo. You know, you got plays coming in from the sideline. A lot of times you're running the same play, but you're running the RPO, the different RPOs off of it. And you're just boom, 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 getting up and down the field. And this, I almost wonder if the helmet communications are adding a level of distraction, isn't the correct word term, but it's almost like a distraction. It's almost like a little carrot dangling that makes you want to take advantage of it. Because it becomes a talking point if you're not taking advantage of it. Just think about the bowl game this past season, but it makes you want to take advantage of it, but it doesn't really benefit you because you're having to change. It's not helping the process that you had in place. It's changing the whole process. So that's my thoughts on helmet communications. I think it helps defense big time. But this one, offense, I almost wonder if the system that Hugh had in order is better for Hugh's offense than trying to work the helmet communications and calling in plays that way and talking to the quarterbacks and things like that. I do wonder if maybe it's a little bit of a hindrance sometimes. Great question. Let's give a shout out to our boy Ford Stokes before we keep going. We got a few more questions left. Look, I know we talk about. I know you probably got some kind of retirement in order, some kind of savings going on, but how do you know it's performing at its optimal level? How do you know you're not paying fees that you shouldn't be paying? Ford Stokes is the guy for you to just verify. You can have a $1,500 value free portfolio analysis. That sentence made no sense, but you can get a free portfolio analysis that has it's a $1,500 value elsewhere. No cost to you, and you make a great friend at the same time. Why not double check? Why not make sure? Go to retirementresults.com/plan and give Ford a shout. Tell him War Eagle, tell him we sent you, just show him some love. Show him some love. So thanks again, Ford Stokes, Active Wealth Management. All right, let's keep it pushing. Keep it pushing. This one's kind of a controversial question, but I think it's a fair question, but based off of some of the things we've seen and heard. And I'll give you my thoughts on it. Jared Ogle, one of our very first members. Do you think Thorne is a selfish player? It seems like when it's crunch time, he wants to be the hero. there's a lot of context to this. You can look at the Georgia game, the fourth and one. You can look at, the Oklahoma game, the second to the drive right before he threw the interception. And, passing when we could have just run, when we probably should have ran the ball, and Hugh actually saying some of those should have been runs. That's sort of the context around this. Does Thorne, is Thorne a selfish player? Is Thorne this? Is Thorne that? The answer to me is no. And you can look at the way that he throws his body on the line. And I don't think he's a selfish player at all. What I think Thorne is a very literal player. Thorne is very literal on the way that he thinks. Okay. There's not a lot of, I don't want to say common sense, but sometimes the right answer is the wrong answer based off the situation. Okay. So I take the fourth and one, the fourth and one against Georgia. Okay. I don't want to talk about the whole add a read, did he not? Was there communication? Was there not? Let's just talk about that play in general. Okay. Okay. Assuming that everybody's on the same page, assuming that there is a read on that play, and assuming that everybody knows what to do, Thorne made the right decision. Okay. Because you have an unblocked defender, you think he's going to crash down. There needs to be a read on that play just in a vacuum, because there's safeties that are off the ball, but there's no receiver on that side. So there's no other help right there on the line of scrimmage after that outside linebacker. The problem is that particular situation only needed 1 yard. That particular situation only needed just a yard or two. It did not need a big gain. Now, a big gain would have been great, but it didn't need that. So the way the play was drawn up was literally to get that 1 to 2 yards. I talked about it before. I had some folks on my board that had relatives that played for Hugh that called and like, there's no read on that play. Like that play is that play is designed for 1 to 2 yards. That's almost 100%er. 1 to 2 yards. Why are they reading this now? And I think that's a lot of the problem. It's not so much that I'm trying to call my own number. It's that I'm going through these rules in my head and I'm thinking of them in literal terms without it, like I'm in a vacuum. There's no situational anything around it. I'm executing the rules. And I would imagine, if you look at it more so than not, if you took it on a play by play basis and looked at, did he execute the rule? I bet you more so than not, he's going to have done it correctly. The problem is, what about the time on the clock? What about the situation? What about this? What about that? Like a lot of times situationally, the correct answer can be the wrong answer. I think that's more so the issue than Thorne being selfish. I don't think Thorne's selfish at all. I mean, he got kind of embarrassed, got benched, for a redshirt freshman after throwing 4 interceptions, one of them going off of the hands of a receiver. One of them, the receiver came out and said he ran the wrong route. One of them, he may have held the ball a little too long, but he got hit when he threw it and he had an open receiver. He got kind of embarrassed. But he came back in without anything, without any regrets or like any ill will, and played a really good half against Arkansas and brought us back in the game. And if we hadn't had another interception go off a receiver's hands, that game may be different. So I don't think he's selfish at all. I think he has every right to be selfish. He has every right to probably hold some ill will and probably wear his feelings on his sleeve, but he seems to handle himself very professionally, and he goes out and he gets knocked out in the Missouri game, just gets drilled, sits out a play, comes in, throws a touchdown. I think he just thinks in a very literal sense. And that goes back to the first question. And instead of thinking in a literal sense, I'm thinking about the rules, and I'm thinking more about how Hugh sees it. I think that's the big disconnect. But no, I don't think he's selfish at all. I don't like I don't think he's trying to be a hero. I don't think he's trying to do anything outside of the system. I just think he thinks in a very binary way. And that's, and I think that's the biggest issue. Good question here. Kurt Cobarn. This 2025 class is super deep. You got 27 commits. And he asks which guy out of this 2025 class is going to be the biggest impact, have the biggest impact next year. So I look at who's leaving, and I look at where are the like opportunities for these guys to play early. And you're going to lose a lot of defensive linemen. You're going to lose some of the older guys like a Jaron Thompson and a Keontae Scott in the secondary. So I think defensive line and secondary are going to be specifically at safety or that nickel position are going to be where those guys can step in and probably make the biggest impact. So if I'm looking at this commit list and who I think will make the biggest impact next year, I feel like Eric Winters is a guy that's going to be could be a really big impact. He is very versatile. He can do a lot of things. I think he's fast enough to play some nickel. I think he's fast enough to play some free safety, and I think he's big enough to come down in the box and be a box safety. So I think Eric Winters and Anquan Fagans, those two are definitely going to be battling to me for playing time early. Anquan Fagans plays a little bit of corner as well. So those two to me are the biggest guys that I think that could make a big impact next year. Other guys that I feel like could step in early, Traveris Dice is probably somebody on the offensive line having a really good year. He's put together really well already, sort of physically ready. There's going to be some opportunities on the offensive line. Antonio Coleman is a guy he's super duper explosive, and you're losing a lot of defensive linemen this year. I think he could be one that gets a lot of playing time. But if I had to pick potential day one starters, I'm really watching Eric Winters and Anquan Fagans. Let's keep it going. We got two more. This is a really good one based off of some of the things that Hugh said recently. Brian Beatty. Kurt Cobarner, which is a great name for the 2025 class guys to have the early impact. Brian Beatty, do we have too many cooks in the kitchen? Can our offense have an identity or develop rhythm with three coaches calling plays at different times? Okay, so Hugh said Derek Nix calls some of the early down plays. Kent Austin calls some of the third and long type plays. And then he obviously calls a lot of the plays. So number one, I'll tell you a couple of things on this. Okay. Number one, I don't know that when he says that, I don't think that he's like, okay, Derek, this one's on you. And then Derek Nix calls the play. Kent, this one's on you. And then Kent calls the play. I think they may be talking and it's like, what should we do here? And then Derek Nix is like, hey, I'm looking at this situation. Let's try this on first down. Same thing with Kent. Hey, Kent, looks like we got third and eight on the right hash. What are you thinking here? I'm seeing this. And then I think ultimately Hugh probably calls the play in, but you got a lot of input from those guys. I just don't know that it's set up the way. I know you have to say that Derek Nix calls some plays, probably contractually, because otherwise you would have had to pay his buyout at Ole Miss. And he may call some plays. But I don't know that it's like – got three guys that have a niche and like one's calling when it's his turn, one, and then you're tagging in and out. I think it's just a communication. I think it's sort of always been that way. He's always done this with Kent Austin. When he was at Ole Miss, he did this with Derek Nix. So it's three guys that all think the same way, and they're all it's an ongoing conversation. I don't think there's too many cooks in the kitchen. Another thing is like if you're winning and Hugh says this, nobody cares. If you're winning and Hugh says something like this, like it becomes sort of a trend, like, oh man, we got to have multiple coaches, dividing out jobs this way and talking through plays. The only reason this is brought up is because you're 2-5, if we're being honest. I mean, Hugh's offense has never been an issue. It's always been really good at every single stop he's ever been at. And this is sort of the way that he does things. So I don't know that there's too many cooks in the kitchen. I just think you got to win, and then nobody cares, if I'm being honest. All right, let's hit the last one, and this is a really good question, and we'll get out of here. William Tiger, is Auburn in a better position to compete for a championship in the current college football climate, NIL, portal, expanded playoff, compared to the BCS era? Okay, so I'm going to take this in two different directions. Okay, so number one, is Auburn in a better position now for the playoffs or the BCS? Okay, obviously it's got to be the playoff because it's 12 teams. And you can look over the past several years and see that there's teams, like you think about 2017, that team probably would have been in the 12-team playoff. There's a lot more opportunities for Auburn to have made the playoffs or at least been close to the playoffs, 2006, you know, those type teams. So I think obviously the playoffs give you a better chance to compete for a championship than the BCS. Okay. But now we go to the second part of the question. Is Auburn in a better situation with the NIL and portal and expanded playoff than they were in the BCS system, which was all high school? Okay. So I think that if Hugh is your coach in 2020 or in 2019 or whatever, and it's all high school, you're in a much better position than you are now with the portal and NIL and all this stuff, because that's Hugh's bread and butter is high school. And you can still see it today, is he's building this thing like crazy through the high school ranks. I think that under the old system, that's way more beneficial than obviously the new system. And there's some things that he's learning and having to kind of learn on the fly. But you know what? Everybody's having to learn on the fly because this thing's still only about 3 years old. Okay. So it's not like there's just these seasoned portal and NIL guys, just tons of those guys out there. It's everybody sort of learning on the fly. So I think that if it was Auburn would be in Auburn would be in a better scenario if the NIL and the portal didn't exist under Hugh Freeze to compete for championships. But I don't necessarily think the portal and the NIL puts Auburn in a bind either. So I hope that answers your question. So playoffs, BCS, obviously playoffs give Auburn a more opportunity to have chances to take some losses and still have a chance to play for a title. But the old system under the BCS and the new system under the NIL and the portal, I think Auburn would have been better off that way under Hugh Freeze, because we saw how well he recruited at Ole Miss. Auburn's got just exponentially more resources. And if there was no NIL and no portal, I think Auburn would be, probably the ceiling probably could have been even higher under the old system versus the new. Now it feels like everybody's going to be, especially after the next couple of years, on a lot more level playing field. So I hope that answers your question. Guys, what a round of questions. Again, y'all kill it every single time. And I want you listeners out there, you can be a part of this. Yeah, we have the Sunday Night Live, but I can't get to every question on the Sunday Night Live when you have hundreds and hundreds of comments and questions. But if you get in to thebarnauburn.com for only $1, you got a chance to be featured in this show, just like all these guys. You see some of the same faces that ask a lot of the questions, and then you see a bunch of new faces as well that have a really good thought and they want to get it talked about on the show. So I really appreciate you guys listening. There's still a time to take advantage of that $1 membership at the Barn for the first month. It's not going to be around forever, though. So definitely check it out. Take advantage. And again, if you like this video, like it. If you like this channel, subscribe to it. We got some big time guests coming up. Big time guests for our show tomorrow. And it's going to be, I think, DeMarcus Riddick. And then may have a big time recruit on the hook too, that we may have a little bonus show with. So got a bunch of good stuff coming on at the barn. Let's see if we can take down Kentucky. Thanks for listening. And you know, we're going to be back every single day. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Stay buttoned.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.